every single marketer and every single brand should be attempting to earn a disproportionate share of conversation.
If you work for an organization where they say, bring us a chart that goes up and to the right, you have a challenge.
Half the money I spend on advertising is wasted. The trouble is, I don't know which half.
I am here to inspire you, to excite you, to motivate you, to transform you, to energize you.
Hello and welcome to Pipeline Visionaries. This episode features an interview with April Moe, the CMO at Kariba, a leader in cloud treasury and finance solutions, delivering mission-critical capabilities for cash and risk management, payments, and working capital solutions. In this episode, April shares her expertise on managing perceptions through PR and building a demand creation arm from scratch. She also dives into the process of rebranding and the framework that they used at Kariba when crafting their new strategic narrative. But before we get into it, here's a brief word from our sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Qualified. If you're a revenue team that runs your business on Salesforce, Qualified will accelerate your lead generation, pipeline, and ultimately revenue. Learn more at qualified.com.
And now, please enjoy this interview between April Moe, CMO at Kariba, and your host, Ian Faison.
Welcome to Pipeline Visionaries. I'm Ian Faison, CEO of Caspian Studios, and today I am joined by a very special guest. April, how are you?
Very good, Ian. Thanks for having me.
Excited to have you on the show. Excited to chat marketing at Kariba, your background, and everything in between. Today's show is always brought to you by our friends at Qualified. You can go to qualified.com to learn about the number one conversational sales and marketing platform for companies that use Salesforce. Go to qualified.com to learn more. April, first question. What was your first job in marketing?
What was my first job in marketing? Well, my first job was schooled in the arts of PR. So my first job was actually working out of a PR agency. And I spent probably the first half of my career just specializing in public relations.
And flash forward to today, tell us what it means to be CMO of Kariba.
Oh, I talk about being the CMO of Kariba as, you know, just a real dream. Kariba is just such a wonderful company with a really strong product market fit. I think when it comes down to finding a company where you can be a CMO, Kariba is as good as it gets, quite honestly. There is this strong product market fit. We're the industry leader in the space that we play in. And coming into the space and being able to, you know, work with all of these wonderful pieces, that's been a real dream.
Yeah, you know, you and I were talking off air about Kariba because we've done some work with Kariba in the past. And it's such a cool company because, you know, this idea of like liquidity and what this mountains of cash that companies have sitting in their bank accounts that is sort of doing nothing or even hidden where CFOs can't see it. Things like, you know, how their cash, you know, everybody says cash is king, but it's like, do people even know what their cash is doing? That when I first learned about that and learned about what Kariba does, I was just kind of blown away. And this is something I'd never thought about like, yeah, that's a good point. What is happening with all that cash? You know, you think these massive companies who are sitting on piles of cash or companies that aren't, you know, like everybody needs to figure this out. And yet tons and tons of folks don't have it figured out yet. What an exciting place for you to be.
It really is. It really is. And, you know, we talked about our company right now going through a reflection period. We're rebranding ourselves. And one of the big things that we're doing, Ian, is we're rethinking the way that we're telling the Kariba story and how we're defining that. And to your point about the invisible vault of cash that, you know, that sits within the company that CFOs or treasurers may be not discovering at this point, We're realizing from our conversations with CFOs specifically that the real issue for not having that visibility is because they're gridlocked. Mm-hmm. They're gridlocked, you know, by systemic challenges, systems that are siloed, disconnected, not allowing them to see exactly where their idle cash is. And that is the problem. So through the rebrand, we really wanted to come up with something that was going to elicit a visceral reaction from CFOs as the enemy. And we think we've come up with a perfect phrase for that. And we call that the liquidity gridlock. The gridlock that you experience being just kind of, you know, stuck and hamstrung by disconnected systems, manual processes, really preventing people, CFOs and treasurers, from discovering where their idle cash is. So yes, that is a real challenge, and Kariba is here to solve it.
It's so cool that you're able to come in, you know, as a CMO, where you could see that problem from you know, a new perspective. And it's funny because, you know, when I started working with Kariba and looking at this problem from a very similar perspective, like outsider coming in and saying like, hey, what is the challenge here? I love that idea of the gridlock and trying to figure out liquidity is you know, the name of the game for treasury folks and CFOs specifically. Did you hear that, you know, phrase come up over and over again from CFOs? Did you hear sort of their frustrations around that when you thought about, you know, choosing place for the rebrand?
That is such a great question. One of the things I did coming on board as the new CMO of Kariba was I started to speak to our customers. I wanted to understand, you know, what they loved about us and what potential challenges that they may have that we really needed to pay attention to. And over the course of the last 6 months, I've spoken to dozens of CFOs in particular. I will say that there are two themes that have repeatedly come up that really, really point us towards the whole notion of gridlock. So they talk about their biggest challenges as number one, just having disconnected, siloed, fragmented systems that are not allowing them to have a proper view of their financial, you know, financial sort of health of the company. That is of impact to the CFOs because they're accountable for the cash position, their working capital positions. And so being hamstrung by all of these systems is an area that has prevented them from having visibility, full visibility. Now, the second theme that has come up a lot is their recognition of manual processes as a challenge for them because it opens the team up to a lot of human error. So things like Excel spreadsheets, right? And still doing things and calculating things manually, that is a real thing amongst many finance teams today. So together, when we think about systems and we think about manual processes, all of these things are hugely uncomfortable for CFOs. And in fact, one of the CFOs I spoke to mentioned that the notion of liquidity gridlock or the phrase liquidity gridlock is liberating for him. It's liberating for him because it is pointing towards systemic challenges that only the right software providers can solve, right? To the best of their ability, they're doing whatever they can, but there's this small part that's preventing them from outperforming the business strategy. And it is that piece that Kariba fits into.
I love that. That's really cool. Any other things that came up during the course of, you know, doing a rebrand and thinking through this stuff that you found particularly interesting or insightful?
Yes, the one insight that I found really insightful. So when we think about liquidity, there is such a, you know, we're open to interpretation when it comes to liquidity. So different CFOs, sometimes even different treasurers, they think about or define liquidity very differently. Mm. And for some CFOs I've spoken to, and these are probably the more classically trained CFOs, the ones who have risen, you know, to the very top positions from FP&A, you know, starting from, you know, rising from VP of finance positions, I have noticed a trend where they tend to see liquidity as a department, right? Mm-hmm. That is, you know, liquidity being handled by the treasury department. And I then have met a different group of CFOs, and these are the ones who don't come from classic, you know, your classic FP&A backgrounds. Very interestingly, we're seeing a lot of CFOs, and I've spoken to a lot of them that actually came from consulting firms or departments that were handling strategy and transformation. And these are the ones that are looking at liquidity and defining that in a much more, in a broader and much more, I think, business contextual manner than I have typically heard liquidity being defined. So that's been really eye-opening to me to see that even among CFOs, there's not a standardized view of, you know, the importance of liquidity for them.
I wonder what that is for marketing. Maybe the word brand, you know, like yes, 20 marketers, every single person thinks of brand a different way.
Oh my goodness, you're so right. You know, so many of my counterparts probably view brand as look and feel. But then, you know, there's a school of us that really see brand as that the anchor, the nucleus from which a lot of what we do is built on.
Yeah, that's probably exactly right. You know, it made me think because, you know, I'm in the business of content, and you know, you always hear the two things that are always king: cash is king and content is king, right?
Yes.
It struck me sort of like as I was thinking about, you know, this episode and how important cash is and liquidity specifically. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of how it is for content too. Content's the same way, right? Where it's like, you know, for some people, it's like content equals blogs. And then for other people, you know, it's this huge, you know, every single part of your marketing is content because every single thing has someone that's either doing, you know, some design or some writing or some, you know, some audio or video or, you know, or whatever it is. So anyways, it's just, yeah, that's a really great insight of that. If people don't even agree on what the word means to begin with, like, then how do you even address the word, right?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And that has really inspired us to think about, you know, ourselves as evangelists, you know, in the art of liquidity for the enterprise. And thinking of how do we actually use what we do on our platform to help CFOs and treasurers connect liquidity to their most strategic advantages. So it's not just liquidity in terms of, you know, identifying your assets and how to convert that into cash, which is the economical definition of liquidity. But more importantly, what do you do with it? How do you grow your business with it? And how do you outperform your business strategy? And that's where we're heading to currently with our rebrand in our strategic narrative.
Love that. Okay, let's get to our first segment, the Trust Tree.
With the knowledge you've been given, you are now on the inside of what I like to call the circle of trust.
What, I thought we were in the trust tree with in the nest, are we not?
Where you go, feel honest and trusted, and we and you can share those deepest, darkest pipeline and marketing secrets. We know a little bit about what Kyriba does. Obviously, you're selling to CFOs and finance leaders and treasury leaders. What types of customers do you work with?
Yeah, so we work with a lot of treasurers. So typically, they're from the office of the CFO. They're usually the treasurers or the head of treasury. And quite occasionally, we encounter the CFO. But typically, that would be, you know, the VP of finance or the treasurers or the controllers within the office of the CFO.
Yeah. And what does that buying committee look like?
So the treasurers are the ones that end up being the end user, and their teams are the ones that are using our platform. So we have about 80,000 users of them on our platform. What happens is, you know, they're the ones that get really sold and convinced and become huge diehard fans of Kyriba, the Kyriba platform. And the CFOs are the ones that would have to sign off on those purchases. Also, there is a mix of IT in there because a lot of what we do as a platform and some of the bank connectivity that we offer requires integration to their systems. And so, you know, even making sure that the CIOs are involved at the right time, that usually occurs at the later stages of our deals.
And then, you know, obviously you haven't, you know, been in the role extremely long, but you know, 6 months in, I feel like you've been there long enough to know all the different where all the different things are going. How do you think about when you came into the role, your marketing strategy broadly?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So my marketing strategy is really contingent upon how do we build marketing to become a really, really powerful revenue engine for the company. So working backwards, what does that mean? So there are a few things that I know. So for instance, marketing at Kyriba has historically been a very powerful force for revenue. Today, it accounts for over 55% of our net new customer acquisitions. And as we think about that, the question now becomes, how do we grow our marketing engine at Kyriba to become scalable and repeatable? And whilst a lot of companies out there might index on demand capture, so your SEOs, you know, your paid media, capturing existing demand, our strategy is contingent upon making sure that we're not just capturing existing demand, but also filling the engine with net new demand by putting an emphasis on demand creation. So the combination of demand creation and demand capture is how I would describe the marketing strategy.
I love that framing because I think it puts more emphasis onto, you know, the teaching part of it, you know, those folks, as you mentioned, maybe the folks that have that old school sort of mindset that it's like, hey, there's a new way to do things. There's a new sort of problem that you need to deal with that are what some of the, you know, your more progressive counterparts are doing, how they're sort of changing their companies and you can too.
That's exactly right. And we believe that there is, you know, there's always going to be just a finite number of people at any given time ready to buy. And what about the people that, you know, perfectly fit into our ideal customer profiles that are not yet ready to buy? Those are the people that we need to influence and educate and build affinity with. And so we spend a lot of time thinking about, you know, what their right messaging is for them. How do we deliver valuable content to them? Content is king, as I agree with you. How do we build trust with them? That is really important for us. And then making sure that when they're finally ready to buy, Kariba is top of mind for them.
And what does your marketing team look like? How do you structure your team?
So let's start with the team as I inherited them 6 months ago and the team as it looks today, because it blends perfectly into what I have just covered in terms of the marketing strategy. So the team as I inherited was, first of all, one of the most resilient marketers I've ever met. Very, very honored, very, very privileged to lead such a great, great team. The team that I inherited was structured, you know, by leadership to be very, very focused on capturing existing demand. So it was a huge emphasis on field marketing, on events, right, on the bread and butter of, you know, just the core of what one would normally assume to be the core of marketing. Now, when I started and did an analysis and audit, I realized that while we were very strong in the demand capture arm, we had practically nothing from scratch. We had to start from scratch on the demand creation arm. We have built a really solid brand name amongst our customer base over the last 21 years. And it is important that we continue to build an affinity with new customers that are not yet in the market to buy. So the way that the team is structured today is, you know, keeping the field marketing team, maintaining a reasonable focus on events, but then ensuring that we are boosting and revving up a product marketing team, creating a really strong public relations team, and also setting up this digital marketing team that allows us to have a really clear distribution strategy, right? Where we can have an always-on sort of communication and demand engine that works and delivers content to where our customers are digitally.
All right. Any other thoughts on strategy there, or should we get to our tactics?
We talked about public relations as the place where I started, where I kind of grew up in my career. So I will say this about, you know, the whole notion of demand creation, which is that even though public relations is not something that can immediately be tied, right, to, you know, same year revenue, it is something that is crucially important because that serves a huge function in softening the ground to drive awareness for sales to be able to go into and be able to effectively sell, you know, outcomes to customers. So I would say that the one thing about demand creation is don't solely peg the ROI to its, you know, direct ties to bookings or revenue, but find other ways to be able to quantify why it's working and be prepared to see results in about, you know, 2 years from creating that engine.
Yeah, I love the framework, the sort of know, like, and trust, right? And it's like if sales is going into a conversation and they've never even heard of your brand before, like that's going to be really, really hard, you know? But if you can, like you said, if they already know who you are, perhaps if they already like you, then you can, you know, build the trust and say, hey, this is why we're the best solution. But if you don't have the previous two, it makes trusting someone, you know, how many people do you trust on the first date, on the first time you met them, on the first, you know, it's like you have to build that, you have to build that stuff. So yeah, I think PR is super important.
Thank you. I couldn't agree more.
All right, let's get to the playbook.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game.
Where you open up that playbook and talk about the tactics that help you win, what are your three channels or tactics that are your most uncuttable budget items?
I would say the first would be paid media. And paid media, you know, in a very focused manner. So paid media that actually allows us to capture audiences that are ready to buy using the right search terms that allow us to, you know, identify those buyers. Paid social as part of paid media is really important to us as well. Delivering content. So content is king, but content can't sit idle. We need to distribute that. So paid social does that. For us, it is about making sure the right content gets to the right person at the right time. So that's number one. Number two, I think you might know my answer, and that's public relations. That is critical because what reporters say is infinitely more important than what we say about ourselves. And even better is if those reporters are from outlets that our audiences trust. So being able to identify those and being able to get endorsement or, you know, coverage that aligns us with that thought leadership that our audiences are looking for, that changes the game and softens the ground for our sales teams. And then I would say the third, you know, uncuttable budget, to quote you, would be events, but, and that comes with a huge but, with strict measurement. So events, but knowing exactly what events are for, what purposes they fit. We have a small subset of events that we absolutely believe in sort of driving thought leadership. And then there are, you know, numerous events that we do that are intended for demand generation, demand capture. And those come with a set of ROIs that we hold ourselves and our sales counterparts really accountable to. So for instance, making sure that there is a 10x pipeline a year from now from the point of our investment in order to reevaluate if this is an event that is worth investing in time to come. These are really strong guardrails that we have, but events, no matter what people say, they're not going away. The in-person factor cannot be replaced.
Couldn't agree more. There's nothing like it, right? There's nothing like
it. Nothing like it.
And there's all sorts of different schools of thought there of like, you know, you can make all sorts of assumptions of what digital can do and all that, but there is nothing like meeting someone IRL and actually getting to know them. Going back to the first point, so for paid, it was interesting that you said sort of content delivery is part of that. I'm a huge believer in that. You know, obviously, mm-hmm. all the different podcasts and video series that we do here at Caspian, every single one of them has a paid budget. Every episode has a paid budget. So, you know, my personal marketing strategy, for Caspian, I call it the three Ps, which is podcast, paid, and partners. Mm-hmm. And podcast really is the royal term for like serialized content, but it's easier mm-hmm. to just say three Ps. But yeah, no, I firmly believe that your paid engine is not just about demand capture, but it's also about demand creation. And when you can sort of, you know, accelerate your content going out into places, like you shouldn't be making it if you're not going to promote it, right? Unless it's like an
exactly
SEO piece.
Right.
But even still, I mean, if you think it's good enough to make, it should be good enough to get budget behind it. Whereas I just feel like so many people just never do that. And I'm like, you hired the people, you did this stuff, you did all the work, you made the thing, like put some freaking dollars behind this.
Get it beyond the website. Exactly right.
So why do you think more people don't do that? What do you think the disconnect is? This is like one of the things that like boggles my mind. Hmm.
That's a really, really good question. Maybe sometimes it comes from, you know, just kind of an over-reliance on organic social, where they're indexing on, hey, and that's a good thing. It is a good thing to have organic social followings and amplification strategies. But what paid social does is that it gets it directly in the hands of, you know, your customer profile, your ideal customer profiles. And so being able to turbocharge that is probably something that, you know, that people need a stronger awareness of.
It's definitely something. Another thing that's interesting about it for me too is, and this is some of the stuff that we do, it allows your retargeting arm to be so much mm-hmm. more effective. And like, that's a mm-hmm. lot of the stuff that we do is we'll do paid on a bunch of places. And then we'll do, you know, use retargeting layers for, you know, for the more, you know, product centric mm-hmm. copy and ads. And it's decrease our costs like a ton to be able to do that. Get, you know, giving people content that they actually would be interested in and then letting them self-select into the buying timelines.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah. It's like, oh, hey, I'm going to give you stuff that, you know, is valuable to you all year round. And then, you know, every now and then you're going to see an ad rather than like be you over the head with like buy our stuff 24/7.
So true. So true. It's all about adding that true value really providing helpful content to people without that sales pitch being at the front and center.
Second piece here, PR. You're obviously a PR wizard. You've been a chief comms officer. You've cut your teeth in this. What are the types of things that you're having your PR teams focus on to drive mm-hmm. that brand value, to drive that story, mm-hmm. to drive those things?
That's a really good question. So two things I'm obsessed with when it comes to the land of PR. The first one is we need to have a very clear idea in terms of what perceptions are we really trying to drive towards. Where are we today in terms of perceptions amongst our audiences? And what are the perceptions that we want our audiences to have? Because therein between what is and what is to come is that delta. The delta of, you know, just what the PR agency can do in conjunction with us. So this is where innovation can take place, creativity can take place, a really strong content strategy, right? I always start any type of, you know, PR discussion with, what do we know? And what does our audit tell us? You know, or some of the perceptions of us. It may be, we may find out that, you know, some of the perceptions out there are limiting us in terms of our growth. So then how do we expand that? That's where I would hang our strategy on. And then the second thing is just being very, very clear on which sources, which media outlets our customers trust, right? Because what may be considered tier one by a different company in a different industry could very well not be a tier one for us. We need to know and define our tier ones based on what is relevant and what is considered trustworthy by our audiences, and then really go out there and get our stories out there.
Is there, so you just did this huge rebrand, obviously. I don't know if huge, but you just did this impactful rebrand, and you have a clear narrative that you want to go to market with. Is that mm-hmm. the thing that you're sort of saying to the, you know, to your PR teams to say like, hey, this is the story that we want, you mm-hmm. know, to get out there. But then they're also having to pitch, you know, other stories, right? It's like, that's what's part of the thing that's so hard about PR is getting the journalist, getting the influencer to care, right? About a mm-hmm. story that their audience cares about that's beyond just the brand. And so, yeah, I don't know. I'm curious to sort of like, you know, the brand, the message that you told earlier is such a mm-hmm. clear product message for me, which is, you know, like there is all of this complexity. And really just a lot of, you know, fuzziness that can be solved with technology. But sometimes the journalists don't want to hear that message, you know?
Right, exactly. So coming back to the rebrand that we talked about, as we talked about, rebrand is more than just, you know, look and feel. A lot of it is also about what is that story and what is that strategic narrative. And for us, we worked through a very simple framework, which is to define what the enemy is. So the enemy represents the current way of work that is not productive for CFOs or treasurers. And then what the hero is. So how do we position ourselves as being able to really add value in solving that problem? So as part of the rebrand, Ian, the enemy that we have identified, and I mentioned this earlier, that is the notion of liquidity gridlock. Mm-hmm. That points towards systemic constraints that are really preventing CFOs and treasurers from being able to see their full liquidity positions. And we've been taking a lot of time thinking about what is the solution for gridlock. And I think we may have come up with a positioning for that. And that is the notion of liquidity performance. So the story of ending gridlock starts with connecting liquidity to any CFO's most strategic advantages. And that is performance. So connecting liquidity to how they perform and in turn how their companies perform was the notion that inspired liquidity performance. So yes, in terms of getting our agencies and aligning our PR teams in telling the stories and landing the right stories, part of it is making sure that going forward, Kariba is evangelizing, right, the notion of liquidity performance, because there's a level of education and awareness that needs to take place. What is liquidity performance? I talked a lot earlier about how different people define liquidity differently. So there needs to be some conversations about what that means and how that connects to your business as well. So a big part of what the teams will do is to evangelize the whole notion of liquidity performance, as well as to really raise awareness on the challenges that gridlock presents to finance teams everywhere. So at the very baseline level, it is evangelizing and really landing stories that dispel, you know, any type of perhaps stereotypes or misperceptions about liquidity, and then aligning us as that liquidity performance platform, and then spreading awareness on that problem of gridlock. And then on top of that, I think it would be all about how do we address that gridlock? How are we, you know, a CFO and treasurer's, you know, best companion in the field of liquidity performance? And then it goes from there.
In terms of budgets, what about something that is your most cuttable? You're something that maybe not be working or not fading away, or just not something that you wanted to invest in?
I would say content for content's sake. Mm. What you and I talked about, it, like you said, I have to quote you. I mean, if a content is good enough to be produced, and if it's good enough to, you know, put time and effort into, then surely it is good enough to have a distribution strategy to go with it. It deserves investment. It deserves amplification. So any content that is just for content's sake, I probably take like a second or third look at it and say, you know, this probably belongs on a blog somewhere, but not something that we want to put too much time into.
I love that. That's a great point. What about experiments? What do you save that 5% of your budget for crazy experiments? Mm. Any experiments you're excited about?
So there's one that we're doing in-house that, you know, is something that's coming up as that 5% budget space. So AI, how do we apply generative AI over our vast content repository? I mean, we have loads and loads and loads of content at Kariba. We are in no shortage of content at Kariba. But how do we apply generative AI on our own marketing content or company content to not just make content discoverable, but also to be able to produce and build net new content that is contextual, useful, and impactful? And that is an era of experiment that we're working on right now. The other piece of it, Ian, would be the whole idea of really rethinking how we curate our customer communities. Because today we either do events to get together with them, or we engage with customers on platforms that other people own. So it would be really good to begin to figure out how do we build and own our own digital community of customers, right? To keep that conversation going endlessly.
Yeah. So hard. So important. Right.
So important.
Like, even if it's one thing, right? It's like, that's a crawl, walk, run. It's like, even if it's just like, this is the way that we talk to people, you know, this is the way that we create community. It's around, you know, like, we're going to get together and eat chocolate, you know, once a year, you know, like, even if it's just one thing, it's like, what is our thing, you know?
And that everything that we do really should be in service of our customers. And if we're waiting to speak to them, aside from offering them support or servicing their accounts, then I think we're missing out on a lot of iterative changes that we can make to our platform and in the way that we serve them.
Couldn't agree more. How do you view your website?
As only the most important demand engine for us on the marketing team. The website is so, so important for us at Kariba. I believe it is the case for a lot of companies out there. You know, just the website in relation to us, for instance, generates over 55% of our pipeline. And more importantly, over 55% of our bookings. So that passes through our website through inbound demos and then translates, right? A huge percentage of them translates into actual revenue for us. So it's really, really important for us.
Let's get to our next segment, the dust up.
Uh-oh, here comes trouble.
You may have heard that there was a dust up involving yours truly.
And now we've got a wild scrum with fights breaking out all over the place.
And it is getting really ugly as we've got punches and kicks.
Where we talk about healthy tension, whether that's with your board, your sales team, your competitors, or someone else. Have you ever had a memorable dust up in your career, April?
It was hard to think of one, but I'll pick one. So I remember I've done three rebrands in my career. And in one of my, I think it was my second rebrand, it was just, you know, doing this company-wide rebrand and facing really loud, vocal criticisms from very long-standing employees. We were taking a mascot that is very loved by the company, and you're laughing a little bit because you know probably have an idea which company I'm referring to. But there's a mascot that is very loved by employees and customers and partners alike. And part of the rebrand meant that we wanted to make little tweaks to the mascot, just little tweaks. Yep. We're never going to, you know, change it completely, give it a facelift that nobody can recognize, but we wanted to give it some modern finishes and tweaks. That came with huge objections from longstanding employees. Slack blew up. My email blew up. I mean, every which way I turned at that point, people were, you know, really furious that how dare I touch the mascot. And the way that I approached the dust up was to really think hard about what is that common ground and how can data help so that we don't have to argue based on emotions. Rebrands can be surprisingly emotional for many people, right? And so what I did was I took a few iterations of our mascot, including the original, and passed them through our customers. Our customers will always be the common ground, right? And got them to vote. And the results came back pretty compelling. While our customers really, really love our mascot, they truly appreciate the modern touches that were suggested for the mascot. And so that helped, you know, kind of put everybody at ease, including my loudest critics. And I think finding that common ground and always backing any type of emotional decisions with data is my big learning from this point on.
I love that story. I always love a mask. Anything with a mascot story is always good.
Just don't touch the mascot, right?
I know. Seriously.
Yeah. And that was truly eye-opening for me, Ian, because I realized the reason why people have such an emotional investment in mascots is because, you know, that has been what the company has rallied behind, the galvanized their identity, you know, behind. So it was not about the mascot per se. I think it was more about change and bringing them alongside us, you know, for change that was really, really critical.
Yeah. And if it's what got you there, right? You know, so you feel emotional. It's like my Caspian caribou. We just were talking about this. I'll never change. Okay. Last segment, quick hits. These are quick questions and quick answers, just like how Qualified helps companies generate pipeline quickly. You can quickly go to qualified.com to learn how you can tap into your greatest asset, your website, and identify your most valuable visitors. And instantly, and I mean instantly, start sales conversations. Go to qualified.com to learn more. Quick hits. April, are you ready?
I think I am.
Number one, what's a hidden talent or skill that's not on your resume?
I'm a spice fiend.
Ooh.
No spice level is too spicy for me.
Dang. That's a great skill.
It is something that nobody believes me in, but you will see. I'll prove them wrong.
Do you have a favorite book, podcast, or TV show that you recommend?
Can I say two?
Sure.
Salt by Neera Wahid, which is a poetry book, really good. TV, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Are you kidding? Those ladies keep me on my toes.
Love it. If you weren't in marketing or business at all, what do you think you'd be doing?
I would be an astronaut.
Ooh, good one. What is your best advice for a first-time CMO?
See yourself not as a marketing specialist anymore, but as a senior official of the company that is actually managing the company's business growth. And then stay endlessly curious.
April, it has been wonderful having you on the show today. For our listeners, you can go to Kariba.com, go give your CFO a nudge and say, hey, what are we doing with our liquidity? Is it gridlocked? Go to Kariba.com. April, any final thoughts? Anything to plug?
You know, next month, month of May, AAPI month. So, you know, find your AAPI community out there or your colleagues and think about, you know, what you can do for them to give them a lift in their careers.
Oh, fantastic. That's awesome. April, wonderful chatting with you and take care.
Thank you, Ian.
Thanks again to our friends at Qualified.com, a conversational sales and marketing platform that transforms the way B2B companies sell. Go to Qualified.com to learn more.